A solar orb flashes to black, and in bold lettering, Showtime. A Showtime documentary films presents. A Vespucci production. Green and white letters flicker over black. Title: The Honey Trap, A True Story of Love, Lies, and the FBI. On a clear day, four single-engine planes fly in a diamond formation. An inflatable hand holding up the peace sign reads, "Far out."
Good evening, my fellow Americans. First, I should like to express my gratitude to the radio and television networks for the opportunities they have given me over the years to bring reports and messages to our nation. We annually spend on military security alone more than the net income of all United States corporations.
A band marches, followed by a color guard.
In the councils of government, we must guard against the acquisition of unwarranted influence, whether sought or unsought, by the military-industrial complex.
President Eisenhower used the term military-industrial complex in his farewell address. And what that referred to is this increasing alliance between our industrial capacity in the United States and the military.
A float reads, "Lucky Bat."
War is fought on battlefields with kinetic energy and kinetic weapons, but also it's fought in the mind. It's fought in public opinion. It's fought through public relations and propaganda.
Marvel superheroes wave.
The military entertainment complex as a term is playing off of that. It's suggesting that a similar kind of alliance is forming, not with industrial powers, but with entertainment powers.
Scenes from war movies play.
The really powerful storytelling mechanism that is Hollywood speaks to a different part of us. It speaks to an emotional register. It is the most powerful storytelling mechanism ever devised by human beings.
Footage.
In the invasion of Iraq, we found out a lot about how the military massages and manipulates those industries to get its message out.
We must stop the terror. Now watch this drive.
Do you trust this president?
Yes, I do.
Combat boots and fatigues mingled with stilettos and bling.
Good evening, Ahmed.
Good evening.
Stand-up footage.
Infidel.
But if you can get history written in Hollywood celluloid, then you've really done your job selling the public on the story that you want to tell.
C-SPAN footage.
In the Battle of Iraq, the United States and our allies have prevailed.
George W. Bush gives a speech.
There are large, dominant military entertainment complexes out there, but there's a lot of small ones, too, that are vying for attention and brain space. And ISIS is one of them.
In space, a view rushes past a planet shrouded by clouds, revealing a constellation. Beside it, another graphic radiates energy in space. A series of popular Hollywood film studios' logos appear next to Middle Eastern film studios' logos. A collage shows all the logos at once. Text appears, "Somewhere in ISIS held Syria, 2014. Snow blankets a forest of conifer trees.
ISIS has released a new propaganda video.
This production displays glossy camera work and high-level production techniques.
The ISIS PR machine is constantly making sure the world is aware.
Subtitles.
My dear brothers and sisters, here you can see we are not those so-called evil Salafists, those evil ones. No.
Dennis Cuspert is his real name, a former German rapper, a notorious ISIS fighter and recruiter.
You can live here, have fun. I invite you to jihad. You can write this down, media. I invite you to jihad. Jihad, jihad, jihad.
He was the face of ISIS. There were no celebrities in ISIS except for him. They would put him on YouTube. They would put him everywhere all the time. They were constantly broadcasting Dennis.
Dennis Cuspert had, you know, basically rock star status in ISIS. This individual had a relative free reign to encourage and recruit others online.
When I met Dennis the first time, I could see he was very charismatic. I could clearly see this is somebody who's going to become a leader.
Dennis Cuspert having his own social media accounts, creating propaganda, and just trying to make it more personalized for people back home.
Subtitles.
ISIS will remain. We will continue to build it up all the way to Washington and Obama.
If I'm the FBI, they've seen the videos, they know he's a player,
it makes sense to target Dennis.
Text appears, somewhere in the United States of America, 2014. A creek runs through a snowy town. Executive producers, Ricky Lloyd-George, Hans Charles.
Daniela Green was hired by the FBI as an FBI linguist, a skill set that desperately needed.
Dear brothers and sisters, this is Jihad.
Dennis throws a snowball.
The FBI thought, let's take this young woman and let's put her up against him.
Dramatization. Daniela watches Dennis's videos online.
But communicating gives you their thoughts and their motivations, and it gives you kind of a window into their soul. Honey trap operations, they come with risks. Humans all have vulnerabilities. And there's no greater vulnerability than sex and romance and love.
Directed and produced by Chris McCarble. Text appears. Berlin, Germany, 2006. Subtitles.
Pure authenticity. Poor. Pure reality. Poor. Pure violence. Poor. Pure hate. Poor. Pure love.
Dennis slaps a slate.
Yeah. First take.
Dennis's rap videos play. Subtitles.
Yeah, my name is Dezo Dawn. We are here in Berlin, Kreuzberg, District 36, as always. And lively neighborhood. Everything you need is here. Yes. You got me on camera now. Public enemy number one, Dezo Dawn.
A red and white striped needle stretches above a domed building. Subtitles.
Berlin is the heart of Germany. I'm from Berlin. And I'm proud. Everyone has to come to Berlin. Everyone is talking about Berlin. And I think Berlin is the most famous city in the world. Leave New York aside, there are stories too. Leave Los Angeles, California aside. Leave Paris aside. Moscow, leave everything. Japan, Beijing, leave everything aside. Baghdad, Beirut, put everything aside. Berlin is peak.
Dennis stands on a balcony.
Berlin is definitely the center of the world to me.
Elsewhere, a blonde-haired woman enters an elevator.
I had heard of Dennis during my teenage years. He was a figure who hung out with people from my high school. He was very charming. There were girls who had a crush on Dennis, but he was well known as someone who had a spectacular kind of criminal past in terms of very violent crimes that he'd gone to jail for repeatedly.
Photos flash, subtitles.
I went to jail when I was very young. And for a lot of things I've done that I can't undo, that I'd like to undo. And I have to live with that. I have to live with it. I definitely didn't learn from prison, but from what came next.
Photos of Dennis flash.
Dennis came out of prison from a longer stint, and he came out and decided that he was going to do gangster rap.
Music completely took over my entire life. My life is like a movie, and my music is a soundtrack.
So I met Dennis within this hip-hop thing.
A short-haired man enters a recording studio. Subtitles.
Hip-hop is my culture. I'm Chanel from Kreuzberg, 36er, former label boss, and Kreuzberger simply.
City views of Kreuzberg are shown. Subtitles.
Kreuzberg was also a universe in itself, with influences from all over the world. We were guest workers, migrants. You have to imagine, you're a stranger in a country. And the country doesn't belong to you, and people regularly make that clear to you and oppress you. You're just here to work, earn money, and fuck off at some point. The Nazis started to make themselves felt.
Protesters continually chant, Germany for Germans, foreigners out. Subtitles.
And we stood up.
Pursing his lips, Chanel nods. Footage shows a group of young men wearing leather jackets jumping over a graffitied wall.
So in Kreuzberg, the kind of most famous gang was 36 Boys, which was a gang of mostly Turkish and Arab and Kurdish youth. Dennis was a member of the gang. He hung with them.
Berlin, big city, you gotta push your way through. I always had to fight a lot. A lot of fighting with myself and out on the street.
Rap is a thing that comes from the street and is a tool for street boys. And Dezo was a street kid.
Marcus.
Rap was an imported culture when it started in Germany. The way the Berliners were rapping was like they were telling you stories. That's what I thought was so cool. It was authentic. And Dezo appeared in this environment for the first time.
Zahira Avad.
I met Dezo when I was 12. I can't say anything bad about him. Dezo was somewhat like a big brother, one of the most beautiful times of my life. And because we made music, the music was talking. His lyrics were talking. And we really vented about all the German hypocrisy, the politics, the politicians.
Said Hooper.
Dezo, a very charismatic person, very nice, charismatic person, greets everyone with a smile, a huge smile. At the point when I met him, I noticed right away that he was known in pretty much every corner of Berlin. Everyone had heard the name before. We were the measure of all things, you know what I mean? The 36 boys were just the ultimate.
Concert footage.
No matter what we did it perfectly. And we've always strived for the best. That was the case with graffiti, with breakdance, with hip-hop. You know, we gave him this energy. He wanted to go on a path.
I've managed to get on my feet a bit. I have people on my side I can trust. Faithful people. I found the label that supports me.
We took him in. We hugged him. The only difference was that he was not familiar with Islam as a child. But he saw how we practiced it.
Dennis is pictured with a book.
So I actually engaged myself in Islam. And it has become like a part of my life. I have strong convictions. But I'm not perfect. That means I definitely still make mistakes in my life. Even in my convictions, I make mistakes.
We were pleased that he took it on. He saw we are tolerant and open. We hug the world, we love everyone. As I said, Islam means peace for us. And maybe he missed that. I don't know.
Footage shows a man sweeping outside a restaurant in Berlin.
Dennis grew up in West Berlin, which was occupied by American soldiers.
German citizens commute past war-torn buildings.
In 1945, the U.S. liberates Germany from Nazi rule. Liberated, occupied, it's important to always add that.
American convoys drive through Berlin.
When the U.S. Army occupied Germany, the U.S. Army was still segregated. Black American soldiers were fighting in a segregated U.S. Army and occupying a country where they were told this is an enemy population. There were non-fraternization rules. But they were starving and living in bombed-out cities. Black American GIs were particularly friendly and generous.
Post-war footage plays.
Within a year, you have children born who are biracial kids. So that was part of what was associated with blackness, was America.
The name Sigrid Cuthbert appears over a photo of a woman with short blonde hair.
Dennis's mom was a young woman in the 70s. She was living in Kreuzberg at the time, in an unheated apartment with no warm water, that kind of thing. She would go to nightclubs where American GIs would hang out. Then she met this DJ one night at a nightclub from Ghana, who was playing there.
A multicolored stage light spins.
Dennis's biological father was deported back to Ghana, and she never saw him again. She said she had one photo of him somewhere.
Richard Luke Giffard is pictured.
Dennis was born then, very premature. Dennis had no relationship to his biological father.
Childhood photos of Dennis flash.
She actually showed me an outfit, the first outfit that she dressed him in. She had it pinned to the wall in her apartment. It was a Woolworth teddy bear that she dressed him in the teddy bear's like overalls. They were really very tiny. A couple years later, when Dennis was 3 or 4, she met Benjamin Cuthbert, who was a American soldier in Berlin, and they married and had a second son, Germain.
A photo shows the family petting a cat.
It's kind of interesting that Germany's most well-known terrorist carries the name of an American soldier.
A teenage Dennis smiles in a photo. A bird's eye view shows a train departing a station. Footage shows Dennis walking down a street. Subtitles.
We're going to look for something.
Dennis enters a barbershop.
Here, come in, come in, come in.
He points to a photo on the wall.
Here you can see my autograph. My first autograph. My first poster autograph.
Yes, you could talk a bit about the past.
Gang times. What do you want to know? Back then, we were young. And
footage shows the sun rising over the Brandenburg Gate. Subtitles.
As a foreigner, or as a non-German, or as a dark-skinned person, it was a wild time.
A music video plays. Dennis stands on a balcony. Subtitles.
I call myself ambassador because rap is like the real art. There's a real message behind it. I call myself an ambassador because I get messages out to the people out there. My message for all the people out there is more or less for people to open their eyes, to not blind themselves to everything they see in the media.
Maitha Alassine, Religion and Public Life Fellow in Art and Pop Culture.
The media, which contains journalism, which contains Hollywood and entertainment, people have called that the fourth branch of government.
Dennis walks down a stairwell.
Part of the storytelling is how Muslims are understood by Hollywood and the American political system. Frequently, it's so hard to get away from the casting of the characters like Dennis as the Muslim boogeyman. Now, what I find interesting is how that story can open us up to talking about stories that operate as propaganda to consent to military action.
A bird's eye view flies over the Hollywood sign. Black and white footage shows the sign reading Hollywoodland.
From the earliest films, there's been quite a long history of representing Arabs, the Middle East, Muslims, in a certain kind of way.
In terms of the representations of the Middle East, you went to the Middle East, you will find incredible diversity, like all human beings.
Film footage.
And yet, if you looked at Hollywood films, which for a long time was the main propaganda arm that was representing American state power and American corporate power, you'd find a very, very narrow range.
You'd better be able to pay for that.
Do you know what the penalty is for stealing?
No!
There is a scholar called Jack Shaheen. He went through Hollywood films and documented how Arabs were represented. Very, very dehumanizing.
So you're sitting like I am, for example, watching Back to the Future. Why does Hollywood inject Arabs and or slurs demeaning Arabs in movies having nothing to do with the Middle East?
Who do you think? The Libyans!
Text appears. Jack Shaheen reviewed Hollywood depictions of Arabs and Muslims up to the year 2000. 1% were positive. 5% were neutral. 94% were negative. In Back to the Future, a brown man in a van aims a gun at Doc.
We have thrillers, we have True Lies, we have Executive Decision. In some of these Hollywood films, you see a white woman stripped down, her clothes taken off, tied up, and she's being sold at an auction block.
Scenes play.
You have a series of films called The Delta Forces.
American Marines killed many of my friends when they bombed Beirut.
This also coincides with the obsession around the alleged proliferation of Arab hijackings of planes, which happens decontextualized with these absurd cartoonish characters instilling fear in white female stewardesses. We even have these benign films that have nothing to do with Muslims or Arabs portray cartoonish characters.
What key? That key!
A man points to a bomb.
Who's taken the key?
The negative portrayal of Muslims in Western countries and how Muslims are treated. It's us against them. Muslims are unfortunately viewed as a monolith by people who may not understand, and their only exposure might be through shows like 24.
Stop.
Stories are at the center of social cohesion.
You're gonna have to come up with an alternative.
This is alternative.
Hollywood doesn't happen or create images in isolation. There is a triangle of politics, pop culture, and public opinion that are at work. They have dynamic relationships.
We better wake up and smell the falafel.
When I hear the word mosque, I think of terrorism.
Islam is taking over our country.
I can't trust Obama. He's an Arab.
No, ma'am. He's a decent family man.
Every Muslim is a terrorist. Period.
Right now.
Shut your mouth. Sir. I don't want to hear your mouth.
You see, there's no shades of gray in this war against terror. Either you're with the United States or you're not with the United States.
Footage shows bombs dropping on a city at night.
When you decide to destroy Iraq, for example, that you've got to prime a population. If you look at the propaganda following 9/11, there is 2 years of intense propaganda trying to convince people that 9/11 was connected to Saddam Hussein. So that by the time the Iraq invasion happens, you have something like 83% of the population in support of the war.
Katy Perry salutes.
With horrible, disastrous results and a power vacuum created into which ISIS was thrust. If you look at the propaganda, you pick on the most powerless people in the society and you turn them into scapegoats. These people aren't really human. They don't love their kids like we love them. If you believe that, then these are not real people. These are not real human beings, and therefore, you can do anything to them.
A Muslim woman carrying a bomb is sniped in a movie. Bird's eye view footage shows the train station in Berlin.
The invisibilized dominant power is the American military. It's the American empire. How it pervades and influences every part of his and his community's understandings of what is just and unjust.
Dennis and another man walk outside his apartment building. Subtitles.
I think that when a Muslim rapper or a rapper with Muslim lyrics calls for violence, I believe he means for defense, for example. I also made a track about the Iraq war. I'm not saying that you should slaughter people or that you should bring hate and resentment towards people. But I definitely think you should tell people here what's happening in those countries there, that the people have a right to know the truth about what's happening in those countries.
In 2006, he was meant to tour with DMX in the U.S. after touring with him in Germany and Europe. Dennis flew to L.A. to perform there with him, but he wasn't allowed to fly in. He thought they didn't let him in because he had like a kind of knockoff Adidas shoe with a plane flying in that was supposed to look like the Twin Towers.
A knockoff crossbody bag shows a plane flying into the striped logo.
The music business is full of dirt and crap. I think the industry doesn't value me as an artist, or as a poet, or as a philosopher of the street. I'll stay away for a while and see what happens. But I have to broaden my horizons first, and I can't do it here any longer. And it's not giving up for me. For me, it's just that I want to grow. I'm going to gather new inspiration and new strength.
Dennis kind of jumped around from subculture to subculture in a way. He went from rap to trying to be an MMA fighter.
Footage shows Dennis wrapping bandages around his fists as a shadow on the wall hits a punching bag. Dennis soaks his hand in a puddle of blood. Ismael Chetinkaya, MMA champion fighter. Subtitles.
So living in Germany is tough.
If you're not born with a golden spoon in your mouth,
Im Mund geboren bist,
and if you're not politisch politisch
nicht weiß bist,
I lived in East Berlin for a while, and every time I was in Marzahn, I was fighting with Nazis. Every time. I was alone, small, thin. There was always four or five, and I didn't know why. I just asked, what do they want from me? I didn't know. They hate me? Not everyone can handle it the way I do.
Another time, Ismael exercises on a rowing machine. He throws punches, then jump ropes. Subtitles.
Martial arts was the only way I could express myself, honestly. And where people valued me as a man.
Ismael kickboxes attire. Subtitles.
That was the great thing about the sport. You can't cheat, you can't lie. If you're good, you're good. If you suck, you suck.
Footage shows Ismael in the octagon.
Dennis challenged Ismael Chetinkaya. He sort of very publicly challenged him.
Dezo had a very loud voice. Yeah, he had the urge to prove himself a little bit. He might have been a good street fighter. But in here, you have to be honest. This sport, MMA, shows you whether you belong or not.
A trainer wraps Ismael's fists. Subtitles.
You get what you give. You want to mess with me? No problem. Dezo, he wasn't a fighter to me, you know.
Footage shows Ismael pummeling Dennis's face while on the ground. He tries to kick free while Ismael grapples him. Subtitles.
When Dezo lost, a whole other world collapsed for him. He lost face in front of his friends, was recorded, and went to YouTube. His fight became a highlight. Dezo got dismembered. Dezo got destroyed. I met his friend a few months later. I asked him, is he doing okay? He said, brother, I'll tell you the truth. You broke him.
Dennis walks outside his apartment. Subtitles.
A man who is alone. Who is alone. Should learn to be enough for himself. If you don't have that, then you have an emptiness. You'll become dangerous at some point.
The needle-shaped tower looms in the distance above the hazy Berlin skyline. Text appears. Berlin, Germany, 2010. A robed man with a red goatee sits in a chair with a book.
The main guy in the German context who was recruiting Germans to join the Salafist movement, and many of them went to ISIS, was this guy called Pierre Vogel, who's a white German guy who was a boxing champion. I do think that there was a correlation between Dennis losing and being humiliated in that fight, and then having this meeting with Pierre Vogel, where he was given an out. There's a video of Pierre Vogel where he's sitting with Dennis, and it's the video where he convinces Dennis to give up rap.
I'd like to give you the advice to look for a different career path.
Of course.
But you're already on your path anyway. Definitely. Definitely as soon as possible.
Tattoos mark Dennis's neck.
Dennis is very humble and moved.
Footage shows him sitting with Pierre as well as other Muslim men. Subtitles.
If you listen to music, or if you make music, wait a second. Try to get out of it really fast. Try to get out of it. Because this thing isn't a small thing. It is haram. 100% haram. 100%. I am so glad. Allah shall never leave me there again. I never want to go back there again. And no one should enter this scene. And for the ones already in it, get them out.
Tears wet Dennis's face.
People thought it was kind of ridiculous, but he was serious about it.
Subtitles.
I was happy for him. I thought, okay.
Inshallah, he'll find his right path, his
guidance. But when I saw who he was with, I was thinking, I was like this.
Ismail covers his face.
He always was a person between extremes. Like, with everything he did, he always completely threw himself into it.
A teardrop is tattooed under Dennis's eye.
I think he was always somehow looking for something, somewhere, where he can maybe strike roots, something to do with himself. We all found something, and he didn't.
That's my brother, don't you understand? And all of a sudden, he's like that, hanging out with someone. Ugh, I don't want to make any generalizations. I just want to stay cool.
Sahira wipes away tears. Subtitles.
He really thought of me as his little sister. He thought he could teach me something, but I'm sure he could have, but not when it comes to Islam.
Elsewhere, Ismail sits in a hotel room. Subtitles.
You are not representative of my religion. Who do you think you are? You are not a messenger from God. You are nothing.
I grew up with the Quran, too. I know it. And he tries to explain it to us and tries to tell me what I'm doing wrong and right. It was funny in the beginning. We debated, and at the end, everyone learned something new, you know? But at some point, it wasn't funny anymore. He just wanted to show that he was more committed to this. But he is already taking to the streets and condemning people. Although it is explicitly stated in the Quran, judgment is incumbent on Allah alone. And at some point, when he didn't learn, we said, "Deso, enough. One more time and you get a Kreuzberg ban." And he knows what that means. About 2 years, I would say, from when he was with us until the transition to ISIS. Quick and radical. Fast. Very, very fast and very radical. That's typical of Deso. It's been the same with everything.
Shinal nods, eyes narrowing. Elsewhere, a brown-haired woman is interviewed.
You want to just introduce yourself?
Mm-hmm. My name is Suad McKennett. I'm the international security correspondent for the Washington Post.
For nearly 20 years, journalist Suad McKennett has covered some of the world's most dangerous conflicts. She's gained rare access to the inner circles of groups like the Taliban, Al-Qaeda, and ISIS. In 2015, she co-wrote the blockbuster Washington Post article that unmasked ISIS killer Jihadi John as British citizen Mohammed Emwazi. Her latest book recounts some of her most dangerous reporting assignments.
The last book I published is called I Was Told to Come Alone, My Journey Behind the Lines of Jihad, where I also wrote about Dennis Cuthbert. I met Dennis Cuthbert before he joined ISIS. A young imam from Berlin contacted me one day and said, Suad, there is somebody who I think you should meet. He's someone who comes to my mosque and I'm a bit worried about him. I went to Berlin and I entered the office of the imam, and there was this young man sitting who then stood up when I entered the office, which I found very interesting to show his respect. And we greeted each other in Arabic with, you know, salam alaikum. And that was Dennis Cuthbert.
Dennis walks with earbuds.
We had a very long conversation where we spoke about how he felt as a child growing up with, you know, a lot of discrimination and racism. I could relate to that a little bit because I grew up in Germany as well as the child of so-called guest workers.
He looks down from the apartment roof.
He was looking for an identity, like, who am I? Where do I belong? Where's my home? He felt like somebody who was really looking for a path, but he was also looking for being able to talk to somebody. Now, you have to understand, in Germany or in Europe, very often when young men want to discuss these things, imams feel a bit, they're very careful about having such political debates in their mosques because they are afraid that the intelligence services would say, wait a second, you're allowing these, this is extremism. You're allowing people to discuss this and to have anti-Western views there. This is where recruiters understand they can actually step in and recruit somebody. When I met Cuthbert at the mosque in Berlin, he was still somebody where I felt there could have been a chance to not lose him into the hands of extremism, but there was no one there who would have these conversations with him.
Light reflects off the steel roof of a train as it departs from a station. Text appears, Frankfurt, Germany, March 2nd, 2011.
Blutbad am Frankfurter Flughafen. Ein in Frankfurt lebender Kosovo-Albaner eröffnet das Feuer auf einen Bus mit Soldaten der US-Luftwaffe. Zwei der Flieger werden getötet. Zwei andere kommen mit Verletzungen.
A gunman fired shots at U.S. military personnel on a bus outside Frankfurt Airport Wednesday.
Photos appear.
Two Air Force airmen are dead and two more wounded.
News footage.
I'm saddened and I am outraged by this attack that took the lives of two Americans. I want everybody to understand that we will spare no effort in learning how this outrageous act took place and in working with German authorities to ensure that all of the perpetrators are brought to justice.
U.S. and German officials say they have a better idea now who the suspected gunman Areed Uka might be. He apparently was a prolific Facebook poster. He visited a lot of jihadi websites. When asked about the shooting of the airmen, he said simply, "They're at war with us," which tells us something about his mindset and possible motive.
I learned that there was an attack in Frankfurt. I mean, I went to see Areed's family after the attack happened. I asked him if they would speak to me. And they said he was a quiet, but sometimes also very depressed young man who had also issues trying to find his way in the world. His brother told me, Areed told him that he was following on Facebook somebody who posted a video. The video showed an Iraqi woman was raped by U.S. soldiers.
We're searching for evidence. We're looking for
what?
Weapons of mass destruction.
Here you go, here you go. Come here, Salazar. Come here. Take your fucking hand. Take your fucking hand.
Russ, hold on.
And a message from the person who posted it. We need to defend the honor of our sisters. And asked him, do you remember who posted the video? Like, who was the person your brother was following? He said, I think it was somebody, something like Dog, Dezo, and I said, Dezo Dog, you mean the former rapper? And he said, yes, yes, he was a former rapper. And I was actually in shock. We see, here is a video he posted. This young man followed him, watched the video, and was emotionally so upset about this, thinking it was reality. We know now today it wasn't.
In a Middle Eastern city, a camouflaged soldier mans a turret gun atop a beige tank. Text appears, redacted, 2007. The video Dennis Cuspert posted on social media came from the Hollywood film Redacted, written and directed by Brian De Palma. Redacted is a fictionalized dramatization based on war crimes perpetuated by U.S. soldiers during the U.S. occupation of Iraq.
I spoke to Cuspert about it later. I said, did you know that the video was not reality, that it was actually from a movie? And he didn't know that, but he actually felt that what Areed Uka did was right, and he congratulated the brother, as he called him, and said, because, you know, those servicemen, they were on the way to, you know, they would have killed Muslims, so they were not innocent. When the thing with the video happened, I understood, okay, he actually crossed that bridge into the extremism.
Elsewhere, the Washington Monument towers under a gray sky. Inside a hotel room, a camera is mounted on a tripod.
My name is Kevin Gallagher. I'm a special agent with the FBI's Washington field office. My particular squad focused primarily on what we refer to as terrorist use of the internet, which heavily relies on investigations into terrorist media organizations and their radicalization and recruitment of people in the United States.
Music videos play.
Dennis Cuspert was an individual who I was aware of probably in about 2011, 2012 timeframe. Yes, he was a terrorist, but he was also a cult of personality. This is an individual who's had contact with, you know, American rappers, the types of rappers that I grew up in high school and college listening to.
Lindsay Moran.
The FBI is interested in what are his communications with people in the United States? Does he have followers here who might have a sleeper cell here?
Subtitles.
I built a very, very strong fan base. I also have a lot of personal contact with my fans. I try via the internet, because the internet is everywhere. They can access everything. Everyone can reach everyone.
At the FBI, we broke up the world into various areas of responsibility. The German language radicalization movement was one of those efforts, and that is why the Detroit field office had the investigation of Dennis Cuspert.
Text appears. Daniela Green declined to be interviewed.
Daniela Green was assigned to the Detroit field office as a contract linguist. Her job was to accurately translate information as it was recovered related to communications that Dennis Cuspert was having, not only with people in the United States, but all across the world. In the FBI, our translator's perspective and their professional opinions is highly important to the investigative team. So she was part of that investigative team, and her information and her input was vital to tracking Dennis Cuspert.
Tracking is just following their online chatter, looking at their propaganda releases in various online spaces, and also just observing, kind of just being like a fly in the wall. She was assigned to the case involving Desodog. Her goal was to lure him out of Syria into Turkey so he would be subject to arrest. But I have seen situations in ISIS chat rooms where individuals seem to begin to very strongly emotionally bond with one another, and it does recall more normal circumstances like online dating. I have seen that type of relationship resulting in people being willing to make really bad, awful decisions because of the social bond that they create online.
A bee flies over a grain field. Two brown horses trot inside a corral. Inside a white farmhouse, Daniela looks in her vanity mirror.
I've seen the tabloids that lend to Daniela Green being a honeypot. That couldn't be further from the truth.
She combs back her blonde hair.
To say that Daniela was not a traditional honeypot operation is very true. But the reality is, I think it was very deliberate to use Daniela to communicate with Dennis Cuspert. When people are running intelligence operations, they're always thinking about what is going to be the best tactic. And I think that in this particular case, they recognized that maybe Dennis Cuspert had a weakness for women.
At night, Daniela leans against the side of her bed, working on her laptop.
He's likely to respond to her and want to chat with her and Skype with her and maybe send her pictures and tell her secrets. He's not going to do that with a dude. It's just human nature. Everybody conducts honeypot operations. The FBI, the CIA, the Russian intelligence services, the Mossad. Now, I should be clear about that, because often there's confusion about what a honeypot operation is.
A scene from Austin Powers plays.
A honeypot operation is one where typically a woman targets a man, plays upon his male vulnerabilities, flirts with him, seduces him, and gets him to tell her secrets.
In a scene from Indiana Jones, Elsa steals the Grail Diary from Indy.
As an operative, it was easy for me to go up and talk to a foreign man and to express interest.
Give it a try.
It is strictly forbidden for CIA officers or FBI agents to have romantic relationships with their targets. But that does happen. It's happened throughout history. This was not the first time it happened, and it certainly won't be the last.
A scene from Homeland shows Carrie kissing Nicholas.
But we have to keep in mind that Daniela was not a trained CIA operative, not a trained recruiter, nor was she a trained FBI agent. She was really conscripted as a translator.
This is an FBI contract employee with a top secret security clearance. There's a lot of trust that the government puts in the people that it hires. These individuals are granted access to some of the United States government's biggest secrets.
What is always the risk in that case is that there's going to be some real romance that emerges from that.
So the investigative team was aware of two Skype accounts that were being utilized by Dennis Cuspert to communicate with his associates. Daniela Green created a third Skype account and had direct communication with Dennis Cuspert that was unknown to the investigative team, and that's where she went off the rails. It's probably...
Kevin purses his lips.
The most concerning part of that case is how do we defend ourselves from our own?
Dramatization. Daniela works on her laptop. Text appears. The FBI would not disclose the content of Dennis and Daniela's conversations. A photo shows a man and woman with blurred out faces.
Other aspects to think about in this case, her marriage to her first husband, who was a U.S. military officer. How does someone go from an FBI linguist to a military wife to joining a foreign terrorist organization? That's a hell of a radicalization path.
Text appears, Lawton, Oklahoma. Voice of Lance Janda, Daniela Green's professor.
I first met Danielle when she was a student here at Cameron in Lawton, Oklahoma.
The White farmhouse rests beyond the field.
She was extremely intelligent, a hard worker, and kind of quiet, and very attractive, which I normally wouldn't mention, but I think, you know, she seemed out of this guy that she hooked up with. She was way out of his league.
The voice of Renee Green.
I'm an Air Force wife, and Daniela was an Army wife. She is married to my brother-in-law, Matt.
Matt's face is blurred in the photo.
Being married to a military man, in my view, that's like an honor, you know? Matthew got married to Daniela, who was from Germany, because Matthew was stationed over in Germany in the Army at the time.
Dramatization.
Got this American soldier stationed in Germany, meets a German girl, and I hope it was true love, but he must have been her ticket out of Germany. And I don't mean to be critical or negative of him. That was just an impression I had.
Daniela sits on her porch.
She's young, but she's already married. She's not from around here, so she gets here not knowing anyone.
She holds a beer bottle.
But I'm sure it was still hard on her for her to leave her family. The military life for the wives, you know, it's not an easy lifestyle. Not everybody can handle it.
I met Matt when she graduated. It didn't seem like a happy couple.
Daniela stares in the mirror.
There was kind of a sadness about her. She just didn't seem happy. We didn't know what happened to her after that. And of course, we found out later she'd gotten hired by the FBI. I don't think they cared about her master's degree. They liked the fact that she was fluent in German.
At night, she flips through Dennis's photos.
They had her talking to this recruiter of ISIS, and with her talking to him, I think she may have started getting feelings for him, because that happens to people, you know. You talk to people online, you hear about it all the time. I don't know if she's having problems with my brother-in-law, but I think just with her talking to him, she may have seen him in a different light than what we see him.
At home, Daniela watches Homeland.
I would never have imagined her doing something like this. I think she's a traitor to our country.
The image goes black. Text appears. Bonn, Germany, 2012. Protest footage plays. The German police lock a barricade, then hold back the crowd.
After the terror attack in Frankfurt, Dennis took part in a demonstration against the Danish cartoons. Demonstrations that got violent. And a policeman was stabbed there.
Lights flash on a crashed motorcycle.
But it's a very well-filmed and well-produced video. And Dennis is sort of like the star of it.
Subtitles.
Building this front line here. Please stay calm. We all know what we're doing. Everyone for themselves and all together.
That was the last thing that happened. And because a policeman was injured, he disappeared then. One of the interesting aspects of the German state's role in ISIS is that German intelligence encouraged German Salafists to go to Syria for a while. They encouraged and they facilitated it. So they encouraged people to leave, sort of to export the problem of these people, like, oh, they're gone now, let them terrorize people somewhere else. And then he, in fact, resurfaced in Syria, which was, I think, surprised a lot of people, because he'd always basically been in Berlin. Here's this boy from Berlin, this guy from Berlin, who we've all known about through these various episodes of his life.
Text appears, Raqqa, Syria, 2013. Footage shows the ISIS flag waving above a street.
When he joined ISIS, they wanted you to do something. You could either be a soldier or you became a member of the propaganda team. He became a member of the propaganda team.
Dennis Cuspert becomes one of the most prominent ISIS influencers. But something happened over time. The propagandists of ISIS were deeply influenced by Hollywood.
A video shows soldiers digging.
ISIS had been producing these videos terrifying people.
The sun shines on the rippling black and white ISIS flag.
The videos got more and more extravagant, better production values. you see a kind of cinematic creativity.
A fiery intro title reads, Flames of War Until the Final Hour.
What ISIS did was a totally different level. I mean, ISIS created videos that really looked like professionally made Hollywood movies.
A warrior draws his sword. A soldier leads his squad carrying the ISIS flag. Footage from Morning Joe plays.
ISIS has released a new propaganda video.
This new and very glossy recruitment video, which looks professionally shot and edited, as though ISIS were taking cues from Hollywood films such as Zero Dark Thirty and The Hurt Locker to maximize the terror.
ISIS's media production facilities take a direct cue from what has been going on in the United States for a long time. They've watched all the war movies. They view the military entertainment complex as kind of the tail end or the final maturation of what scholars call the mediatization of war.
The capital is shown.
The U.S. government is into our media sphere in every possible way. The DOD, in 1949, set up the Entertainment Media Production Office. And if you want to make a movie that involves military equipment or personnel, there's only one place to get it. You have to hand in your script, have them look it over, review it, and the Pentagon responds with script change requests. You make those changes, and you get a sort of clean bill of health from the military, and you get access to the stuff. And that's the core of this relationship. But, you know, this is sort of industry-wide. Really, when we started digging in, we had to make official requests to the U.S. government. And you do this through the Freedom of Information Act. And so we started doing this by the hundreds. It's happened, by our count, 2,500 to 3,000 times that we can confirm. My expectation was it's going to be a bunch of war films, and it's not. Maybe 10%. Pitch Perfect 3. The military gave them access to bases and access to troops and pretty much gave them the whole set. The military went into sci-fi. So you see a lot of Transformers and Iron Man.
Movie scenes play.
There are some hardcore representations in Iron Man of Afghani terrorists who are antagonizing Iron Man and killing children and things like that, that are, you know, DOD sponsored. Iron Man and Transformers become this way of talking about the war, but not really being a war movie.
My turn.
Iron Man shoots flames from his prototype suit.
There's an entire apparatus at work, not just one individual pulling the strings. An interaction between two large institutions. You know, Hollywood's driven by money, and they want the biggest bang for their buck, and obviously they're going to go for this relationship. And the U.S. government is in it to fill their recruitment quotas.
Americans watch a parade.
The military entertainment complex is going to want to maximize recruitment. Top Gun is a good place to go if you want to talk about recruitment. Top Gun completely turned the set of images about what the military is on its head. You know, it's not wading through the jungle muck and watching your friend die. It's about being encased in this high-tech tube of steel and rocketing through the atmosphere and high-fiving your friends. And ISIS is very powerful and high production value.
ISIS members gather.
Image making factory. They very well understand that, you know, this empire over here is doing that very, very well. Our little empire might try to, you know, take a cue from them and try it as well. ISIS's military equipment, it's not F-22s, it's little white pickups with a bunch of AK-47s, but they've got stuff. They're using established genres, they're using established storylines.
Even though they were against the West, they were in many ways deeply influenced by the West. So you will see an ISIS video, and you look at, like, there's a bunch of horses, and you slow the video down, and you broaden up, and you see that they're the riders of Rohan from Lord of the Rings. Almost you could say that they were fans.
Men dressed in black walk through the desert.
You could say they're wannabe Tarantinos. Taking this all in, having it influence them, and then wanting to put it back in their own variation of what they were taking from the West. But obviously doing things that Hollywood can't do, which is actually killing people on screen.
The men wield knives, standing before a line of prisoners with blurred faces kneeling on the ground.
I spoke to one of the people who, he was responsible for ISIS media, and he said sometimes when they were planning a beheading, and I'm sorry I have to speak about this, but I mean, it was unbelievable that even when they had planned a beheading, they would bring in the camera team. And the camera team, while this person was kneeling, while this man was kneeling in front of the person who was supposed to behead him, they would tell this guy, okay, you have to hold the knife this way. You have to, you know, wait, turn this way because the sun is better, the lighting is there.
Stars drift around silver letters floating in space. The letters rotate, then stop under a shimmering silver logo reading Al-Furat. Words typed on a computer screen read Wilaya Al-Furat.
ISIS propaganda films evolved to a place where they had a story and a plot.
Footage shows men with blurred faces sitting in offices.
In some films, they would force their captives to be actors. They would perform reenactments.
Video shows ISIS members capturing people and throwing them into the beds of trucks.
And the prisoners would play themselves right up to their execution.
A man wielding a knife points as prisoners with their hands tied behind their backs shuffle into a room. Another video shows a caravan of armed ISIS soldiers.
ISIS realized that media is more than half the battle. You have these incredible videos released before the fall of Mosul. You could say an extensive propaganda campaign, kind of information operations by ISIS to prepare the ground for the taking of the city of Mosul. And we know, for example, that the ISIS force that took Mosul was outnumbered 10 to 1 or more.
ISIS drives through a town.
They just melted away in terror that these guys were in the city and that they were coming to get them.
Text appears. June 10th, 2014, ISIS seizes control of Mosul. Men with assault rifles ride on the back of vehicles. One man waves the ISIS flag. Text appears, June 11th, 2014. At night, Daniela sits on the floor of her bedroom, leaning against her bed. She rests her laptop on her knees.
The ISIS propaganda apparatus saw that you wanted not one approach, but many approaches. So, you know, for example, we in the West often focus on the slaughter videos, and those certainly got a lot of eyeballs, a lot of attention, a lot of controversy. But actually, the slaughter videos were only a small part of what ISIS produced. ISIS produced lots of other types of videos.
An ISIS flag waves above palm trees. An ISIS member picks up a child.
The utopian version of ISIS, the version they put on their propaganda and things like that, is they're basically pitching an American dream ISIS version. We'll give you the white picket fence and the house, and we'll build this great society.
53,000 men, women, and children joined the Islamic State from over 80 countries. That's a big number.
A map is shown.
ISIS's real goal was this state-building project.
Regions are highlighted.
They took over large swaths of territory in Syria and Iraq.
At a park, a member plays with a child.
A lot of the propaganda that they were doing, their videos, their magazines, was a lot of state-building propaganda. They collected taxes, they ran the police force.
A man smiles as children run with the ISIS flag.
Come to Syria and Iraq, we're gonna build this society, and we need you to join. And you had these charismatic leaders. Dennis is a great example of that.
Subtitles.
Tell us what we're doing here, brother.
We are going to warm the hearts of children a little bit, with a little bit of candy.
I don't know what was going on in her head. I don't know if it was part of her job to pretend that she was interested in that part of the messaging of the caliphate. It was definitely something Daniela was fascinated by, how equal everything was. That's what I was told by somebody who was close to him.
Devra Margolin.
Daniela Green knew what ISIS was. She knew what ISIS was trying to achieve. And perhaps part of it had to do with her relationship with Dennis Cuspert and her wanting to explore that. But there's wanting to explore that, and there's wanting to travel to Syria to join the Islamic State to explore that with someone.
Birds perch on feeders hanging from a tower. Trucks are parked in the driveway outside the white farmhouse. Inside, Daniela folds clothes and packs them into a suitcase.
June 11, 2014, Green told her supervisor her intentions to travel to Germany to visit her mother.
This is a normal form that the FBI requires everyone who's traveling with a top secret clearance to fill out. She fills out the form, says she's going to go to Germany to see family, clearly doesn't.
a sedan drives down a gravel road past the corral. Daniela rides in the back seat.
Daniela Green fell for him and really wanted to go and live there in Syria. The FBI had not realized that she had gone rogue.
I was at home with my family, and I received a phone call from my supervisor at the time. He informed me that Daniela Green had never had any intention to travel to Germany, but in fact to travel to Syria. So at the time we started the investigation, we didn't really understand why she left. When the investigation really got into it and we were able to review the Skype conversations that she was having with Dennis Cusper, what we saw was not just the communications between one individual and a terrorist, but the communications between Daniela and another human. There were pet names that were provided to one another throughout these conversations.
We don't know if she was like genuinely in love with him or just kind of lost and decided that she would take certain risks. And maybe she was a rogue agent who thought she was gonna get a promotion for doing really dangerous work of being a honey trap.
At that time when Daniela went to meet Dennis in Syria, Turkey was the obvious place to go as a conduit.
You get to Istanbul, you go down to the border towns, you kind of wait till someone vouches for you. In this case, she already had an in. She had Dennis to vouch for her, so that pulls a lot of weight. And so instead of waiting weeks at a time, which we saw in a number of cases, you know, she was able to cross very quickly.
Daniela Green traveled over to Syria and married Dennis Cuspert within the matter of days.
In Berlin, the needle-shaped tower stands beside high-rises in the hazy skyline. In a tattoo parlor, a woman gets a purple tiger tattooed on her hand.
Daniela came to Syria the same day I arrived. My name is Kim, and I went to Syria from 2014 until 2020. And I just got out of jail in August, the 1st August this year.
Text appears. Kim.
The first time I met Deso, it was here in Germany. He was handsome. And the people knew about him. Everybody knew about him. I didn't see it like, I know Deso Dog. I talked with him. So I was not like, oh my God, Deso Dog is in town. So throwing my bra at him. So, no. But the men were like groupies on him. It was very weird. I don't know why.
The tattoo artist details the tattoo on Kim's hand.
I was over there in ISIS area with my ex-husband because problems in Germany. Here we have only a lot of problems and shit around. And the people called my ex-husband also and told him it's great here, come over, you'll get houses and everything will be fine. And they talked about it like it's a fairy tale over there. So it made the decision very easy.
Photos of a landscape in Syria are shown during the day and at dusk.
And it wasn't a real life. So when I arrived over there, I was completely shocked because it wasn't like this. The foreign people, they were more harsh than the Arabic people, German people. Yes, they were very harsh to the local people. They were weird people with not a lot of friends. In Syria, they got power.
Kim walks down a street.
In the beginning, when I met Daniela, she seemed like a nice, polite person, very quiet and calm, but also a little bit weird because I asked her about how long she's in Islam. And she said not that long, maybe few weeks, few months, and she doesn't know how to pray. Daniela, she was doing a lot of stupid shit, dumb shit, and she was putting her ass in danger.
ISIS videos play.
ISIS was at the height of its power when Daniela Green showed up in Syria to marry Dennis. But it's not like a stable environment to have a honeymoon with your boyfriend. People like Dennis were going back and forth between the front in Iraq and then back to Syria. And so she's left with a bunch of other women who aren't particularly well inclined toward her because she's sketchy.
She wanted to know everything about everybody, and she was checking on the window she was looking inside of the room in the cupboards, and she was like spying around. It got very dangerous for her. I don't understand why she put herself in more trouble.
The image cuts to black. Text appears. The following emails were sent by Daniela Green. Text appears over ISIS footage. I am having trouble with my phone. I was weak and didn't know how to handle anything anymore. ISIS soldiers detain men at night. Text appears. I really made a mess of things this time. I am gone. A caravan drives through the night. Text appears. I can't come back. I wouldn't even know how to make it through. Soldiers shine a flashlight on captives. Text appears. I am in a very harsh environment. I don't know how long I will last here. ISIS parades prisoners in cages through a city. Text appears, but it doesn't matter. It's all a little too late. Soldiers stand between the prisoners' cages in a circle. The image fades to black. Text appears. I wish I could turn back time some days. A vehicle drives down a dusty road. Text appears. God willing, I can arrange things. A truck drives ahead, billowing dust in its wake. Footage shows Dennis driving one of the vehicles.
He helped her because I think he didn't want to get her killed if ISIS catches her.
The fact that Daniela Green was able to leave is very, very interesting. If the version of what the people who were close to him, what they told me is true, he was able to get her out, even though so many people were suspicious of her. People say that he loved her as well, which is why after she told him supposedly that she worked for the FBI, he still allowed her to, or helped her to return to Turkey, to cross into Turkey, because he didn't want her to get killed.
Text appears, August 2014. Footage shows tanks and trucks driving down a dusty road.
My name is Volkmar Kabisch. I'm working for the German public broadcaster NDR. And I was quite often in Syria, Iraq, but since 2014. I was interested in what happened to people joining ISIS. I made films about this.
Subtitles.
My name is Farid Saab, born in Germany. Originally, I'm from Algeria. But like I said, I was born and raised in Germany.
Farid Saab was pretty much involved in the German Islamist scene for quite a long time before joining ISIS, and Dennis Cuthbert did the same. And they met in Syria. And Dennis was like the big shot, and Farid was not that famous as Dennis, but Dennis wanted him to be more famous, so Dennis planned a public relations act, which was filming a very brutal ISIS video.
Subtitles.
We are here in the Islamic State of Sham, praise be to Allah, and are driving right now towards Homs. And every time we go out into the hunt, we hope we'll catch someone we can behead to slaughter someone with a blunt knife.
Shaky footage shows a young man holding his hands up, smiling. Dennis hits a man lying in the dirt in his head with a sandal. Nearby, a missile launcher is mounted on the bed of a truck. Puppies cower inside a hole. Bodies lie in a ditch.
There was a video full of dead bodies, Syrian bodies, and Farid Saab was standing just next to them, and he was there together with Dennis, who filmed him. So he was the director.
Farid squats by the bodies.
And it was all about public relation.
Dennis was still important. The propaganda team had quite a lot of power. They were seen as important as the fighters for ISIS. But it didn't mean that you wouldn't have to also kill somebody if they asked you to. I believe the fact that he stayed there for so long is that he, if they would have asked him to kill somebody, he would have killed somebody. Yeah.
Suad nods. The image goes black. Text appears. Deir Ezzor Province, Syria. Words under a bloody handprint logo read, Deir Ezzor is being slaughtered silent. Footage shows Dennis standing over dead bodies in the desert. He steps over a body, then squats down. Farid stands beside Dennis, holding up his index finger. In the video, Dennis stares at the ground as Farid speaks. The image goes black. Elsewhere, the Washington Monument towers in the sky.
I've had a lot of FBI cases come across my desk, and I've seen quite a lot in the 15 years that I've worked at the FBI, but I had never seen something like this. I remember meeting her at Dulles Airport upon her arrival and her being placed in custody. I introduced myself to her, said, my name is Kevin Gallagher, I'm a special agent with the FBI, and she looked me in the eye and she said, I know you. I came to learn that her and I are actually in a training course in 2012.
An SUV drives through traffic.
My name is Sean Moore. I was the attorney for Daniela Green. I was a public defender doing cases here in D.C., and it was in the courtroom that I first met her.
A hallway is shown.
They kept her at a hotel near Dulles for a couple of days, interviewing her. It wasn't as if I met her immediately upon her arrival. The prosecutors approached me and said, look, she's facing a considerable amount of time. She could help herself and she could help us. The charges against Daniela, it involved making a false statement to the government, but there was an enhancement because the false statements also involved terrorism. Initially, when she started doing the translating, she was following the line and trying to help lure him to a place where he could be arrested. Now, aside from the romantic conversations with Cuthbert, I don't know too much about that and whether that was true or false or what. But my impression was that because it wasn't working, she became frustrated. And she decided to take things into her own hands, and she got into something way, way over her head.
You have a high-ranking FBI employee who had knowledge that would have been restricted, and that right there is enough to be criminal in terms of the Espionage Act. That law was passed for the sake of chomping down on people who walk away with secrets. The Espionage Act does not require you to go online and distribute information. It's enough to make information available. And her knowing information and going to ISIS-held Syria would have been a slam dunk court case. And these are like stiff sentences. It's like 10 years per count.
After she was arraigned and brought to jail, we immediately went to an offsite. We spent with her over the course of the next 24 hours, probably about 12 hours, interviewing her, triaging that with focusing on any potential threats to the United States. At no point did we feel that she withheld information from the United States government. And based on the information that we received in the sentencing memo, the assistant United States attorney identifies that Daniela Green came very close to skirting the line of far more serious charges.
Ultimately, she pleaded guilty and was given a sentence of 2 years. She was obviously relieved. But it's almost as if she was still kind of in a state of shock about what everything that had happened. But that said, throughout this, she was always concerned about how much of this was going to get out, and if so, when.
Text appears. Daniela Green was released from prison in August 2016. Syracuse, New York. Scott Beck, Daniela's former colleague.
I've been in the hotel business for approximately 30 years, and there was a great opportunity for me to transfer to a big brand new hotel in downtown Syracuse as director of sales and marketing.
In a hotel lobby.
Each night after work, I would go to the concierge lounge and kind of unwind a little bit, have a nice cold beer and eat some dim sum. And Danielle was the hostess there.
Dramatization.
When I first met Danielle, she was quite an attractive woman with European characteristics, straight blonde hair, and a slight little German tint of an accent to her voice. She was well poised and was obviously in quite command of the job that she was doing. She was a person that I saw as immediately overqualified for the position she had. So right away, I started thinking, gee, where can she fit? Where does she want to go?
Daniela looks out a hotel window.
I walked into the lounge one day, and Daniela was obviously upset, and she was really very shaken. I knew that she was previously married. She was separated from her husband, Matt. So it was really very tough. She was obviously going through a transitional period in her life. I asked her what the problem was, and she just blew it off a little bit and said, gee, it's just something that happened in my previous life that I'm really sorry about and I really regret.
It's preposterous to me that she only spent 2 years in prison. The fact that she went rogue in this fashion, that they had no idea where she was, that she was essentially operating against the Bureau without their knowledge of it. It's very embarrassing for the FBI. The U.S. government and the FBI, they don't want the press questioning Daniela. They don't want her side of the story to get out. The FBI would have preferred if no one knew about this case, if it just kind of got brushed under the carpet.
Footage shows a woman with her face blurred strolling down a street. A TV news headline reads, FBI translator goes rogue, marries ISIS fighter. News footage plays.
A bizarre story that really does sound like something straight out of Homeland or a terrorism movie. It's an FBI translator who was investigating an ISIS fighter in 2014. And then fled the United States for Syria and married him.
Love can make us do strange things. The story of an FBI translator who married an ISIS terrorist.
It's a story almost too preposterous to be true. The FBI translator who runs off to the Middle East to marry the terrorist she was tracking from the Detroit FBI field office.
Drew, this is an incredible story. What's the FBI saying about how it happened?
Green, who still had an American husband at the time, wrote an email.
Was having an affair with an ISIS operative.
Given that Cuthbert knew she worked for the FBI.
The case got zero publicity for months because the records were sealed by the court. And critics say Green got off with a life sentence, 2 years in probation, because she cooperated with the FBI.
And like we said in our report, most people facing these type of charges are getting much more severe sentences than this former FBI employee.
Footage shows a parade.
Daniela got a great deal. It seems that the government is protecting itself by protecting her. She's back in the U.S. with her ex-husband, Sergeant Matthew Green, and after serving a short sentence, she's now working at the Home Depot.
Daniela carries a cooler.
So in 2014, you have to remember, our intelligence on ISIS was good, but it wasn't great. We knew the top leadership, we could have a general sense of the structure, but anyone who could light up the network, who goes where, what do you do in there, that is immensely valuable.
Her cooperation was extensive. It provided information about ISIS that we hadn't seen to date, and we had eyes on the ground. While that was not our intention, it was a byproduct of the situation that we were presented.
Maybe she's savvier than we all think, and she was able to negotiate that deal by providing very specific information.
The FBI agents, they were very interested in locations of houses where he stayed. She provided as much information as she could about what Cuthbert was doing. Led me to believe that they were trying to get information to target him.
She walks through the crowd, phone up to her ear. At night, Daniela watches fireworks.
Last night, on my orders, America's armed forces began strikes against ISIL targets in Syria.
Time reverses, showing the fireworks descending back into their mortars. Text appears. Dennis Cuthbert was targeted by the United States military and was killed in airstrike in 2018.
Wars succeed by this drumbeat of propaganda to feel people encouraged to inspire and to terrify has real meaning. To move the heart is power.
Fireworks shrink back together before they explode. Elsewhere, people walk a tarmac. Subtitles.
I think the cops want to get to us.
Yeah.
That's it from me. Desolation's dog, the Black Angel from Berlin Kreuzberg, 36. Keep going, stay tough, stay on the ball. Or as we say in hip-hop, what's up? Yeah, do your thing. Pull through. Try to get the best out of it. Hang on, man.
In the video, Dennis smiles, then walks down the stairwell inside his apartment building. Subtitles.
He is just gone. Mentally gone, too. And there's no coming back. Everyone somehow shares a little of the blame.
I didn't see him in it at all. He thought it was really cool. He didn't realize he was just cannon fodder.
Resting her chin on her hand, Zahira fights back tears. Subtitles.
I think Deza was already dead.
Deso screwed up, man. And it's over. He dragged down the whole culture. We stood behind him and we would have his back with all our might. He abandoned us. He abandoned our neighborhood. And we counted on his potential for us and for our boys, too. And he squandered it and wasted it. We would be on top. We would definitely have won the crown.
Thank you, too. That's good?
That's great, yes. Thank you.
At night, Chanel walks down the street alone. Audio description narrated by Andy Salais. Associate producers, Suwad McKennett, Lucas Weinbier, Leon Dish Becker. Daniela Green played by Piper Parks. Archival producer, Philip Nell. Consultant, Tom O'Connor. Music supervisor, Jackie Westfall. Additional credits appear. Copyright 2024 Showtime Networks Incorporated, all rights reserved. White bubble letters appear over black. Vespucci. Small print white letters appear over black. Permanent Wave Productions. A presentation of Showtime Networks Incorporated, a Paramount company.